اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. يا أيها العزيز مسنا وحلنا الضر وجعنا ببزاعة مزجات فأوف لنا الكيل فتصدق علينا إن الله يجزي المتصدقين. يا رب الحسين بحق الحسين اشف صدر الحسين بظهور الحجة. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله، السلام عليك يا ابن رسول الله، السلام عليك يا خيرة الله وابن خيرته، السلام عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين وابن سيد الوسين، السلام عليك يا ابن فاطمة سيدة النساء العالمين، السلام عليك يا فار الله وابن فاره والوتر الموتور، السلام عليك وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك، عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار يا أبا عبد الله، يا أبا عبد الله. لقد عظمت الرزية وجلت وعظمت المصيبة بك علينا وعلى جميع أهل الإسلام، وجلت وعظمت مصيبتك في السماوات على جميع أهل السماوات، فلعن الله أمة أسست أساس الظلم والجور عليكم أهل البيت، ولعن الله أمة دفعتكم عن مقامكم وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها، ولعن الله أمة قتلتكم، ولعن الله الممهدين لهم بالتمكين من قتالكم. برئت إلى الله وإليكم منهم ومن أشيائهم وأتباعهم وأوليائهم يا أبا عبد الله، إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة، ولعن الله آل زياد وآل مروان، ولعن الله بني أمية قاطبة، ولعن الله ابن مرجان، ولعن الله عمر بن سعد، ولعن الله شمرا، ولعن الله أمة أسرجت وألجمت وتنقبت لقتالك بأبي أنت وأمي، لقد عظم مصابي بك، فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم اجعلني عندك وجيحا بالحسين عليه السلام في الدنيا والآخرة يا أبا عبد الله، يا أبا عبد الله. فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم اجعلني عندك وجيحا بالحسين عليه السلام في الدنيا والآخرة يا أبا عبد الله. إني أتقرب إلى الله وإلى رسوله وإلى أمير المؤمنين وإلى فاطمة وإلى الحسن وإليك بموالاتك وبالبراعة ممن قاتلك ونسب لك الحرب وبالبراعة ممن أسس أساس الظلم والجور عليكم، وأبرأ إلى الله وإلى رسوله ممن أسس أساس ذلك وبنى عليه بنيانا وجرى في ظلمه وجورح عليكم وعلى أشيائكم، برئت إلى الله وإليكم منهم، وأتقرب إلى الله ثم إليكم بموالاتكم وموالات وليكم وبالبراءة من أعدائكم والناسبين لكم الحرب وبالبراءة من أشيائهم وأتباعهم. إني سلم لمن صالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم وولي لمن والاكم وعدو لمن عاداكم. فأسأل الله الذي أكرمني بمعرفتكم ومعرفة أوليائكم ورزقني البراءة من أعدائكم أن يجعلني معكم في الدنيا والآخرة، وأن يثبت لي عندكم قدم صدق في الدنيا والآخرة، وأسأله أن يبلغني المقام المحمود لكم عند الله، وأن يرزقني طلب ثاري مع إمام هدى ظاهر ناطق بالحق منكم. وأسأل الله بحقكم وبالشأن الذي لكم عنده أن يعطيني بمصابي بكم أفضل ما يعطي مصابا بمصيبته مصيبة ما أعظمها وأعظم رزيتها في الإسلام وفي جميع السماوات والأرض. اللهم اجعلني في مقامي هذا ممن تناله منك صلوات ورحمة ومغفرة. اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد، ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد. اللهم إن هذا يوم تبركت به بنو أمية وابن آكلة الأكباد، اللعين ابن اللعين على لسانك ولسان نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله في كل موطن وموقف وقف فيه نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم لعن أبا سفيان ومعاوية ويزيد بن معاوية عليهم منك اللعنة أبد العابدين. وهذا يوم فرحت به آل زياد وآل مروان بقتلهم الحسين صلوات الله عليه. اللهم فضاعف عليهم اللعن منك والعذاب العليم. اللهم إني أتقرب إليك في هذا اليوم وفي موقفي هذا وأيام حياتي بالبراءة منهم واللعنة عليهم وبالموالاة لنبيك وآل نبيك عليه وعليهم الصلاة. اللهم لعن أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك. اللهم لعن الإصابة التي جاحدت الحسين وشايعت وبايعت وتابعت على قتله. اللهم لعنهم جميعا. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك، عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت، وبغي الليل والنهار، ولا جعله الله آخر الأحد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. اللهم خص أنت أول ظالم باللعن مني، وابدأ به أولا، ثم لعن الثانية والثالثة والرابع. اللهم لعن يزيد خامسا، ولعن عبيد الله ابن زياد وابن مرجان وأمر ابن سعد وشمرا وآل أبي سفيان وآل زياد وآل مروان إلى يوم القيامة. سجدة. اللهم لك حمد، لك الحمد حمد الشاكرين، لك على مصابحهم الحمد لله على عظيم رزيتي، اللهم ارزقني شفاعة الحسين يوم الورود، وثبت لي قدم صدق عندك مع الحسين وأصحاب الحسين الذين بذلوا محجهم دون الحسين عليه السلام. صلى الله عليك يا مولاي يا سيدنا المظلوم ويا سيدنا العطشان ويا سيدنا الغريب يا أبا عبد الله يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين. رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة مع الصلوات.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين الذين ذهب الله عنهم ورجساه وطهرهم تطهيرا. أما بعد، قال الله الحكيم في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد الذكر أن الأرض يرثها عبادي الصالحون، صدق الله العلي العظيم. A series of discussions have gone into its eighth night. Remember one thing. Any action, any step, any good word, anything which is done for the sake of Sayyid al-Shuhada, understanding who Sayyid al-Shuhada is, the reward is more than you can ever imagine. As these nights have gone by, you would have noticed inside of you that there is a change, that there is a softness, and that there is a movement. Your faith would have increased by now, and your heart would have been softened by now. These are just some of the very few miracles which take place because of Sayyid al-Shuhada. So therefore, any action, even a step that's taken, Sayyid al-Shuhada doesn't hold a debt on his shoulders. For whatever you do, if you truly understand who you're doing it for, in fact, let me take those words back. Even if you have a minor understanding of who this son of Zahra is, it's sufficient for you that this world and the hereafter is yours. You know, they say, Kamil al-Ziyarat. Every step that's taken in the way of Sayyid al-Shuhada, the reward is 1,000 Hajj, 1,000 Umrah. Now, this is not me who's saying it. This is your Prophet who's speaking to Salama. There's another tradition that says he's speaking to Aisha, where he's saying every step that's taken, Hajj, which is Maqbool, which is with me, Umrah, 1,000, 1,000. Question is asked, and you've heard this before, but I want to explain it again now. You know why? Because as these nights go on, your ma'rifah potentially increases. The very same hadith which we recite on the 1st of Muharram, by the 8th or 9th, you have a different understanding of it. If only you've worked on your heart. So now look at this. Story is in front of you. The example has been given by many ulama. A king goes hunting. And as he goes hunting, for 3 days he's lost. For 3 days, no food, no water. Eventually he comes to a cottage. He sees somebody living in this forest. And over there, when he knocks on the door, a woman comes out. All she has in the world is one sheep. So what does she do? She gives the king milk from the sheep. And then she slaughters the sheep. And she gives the sheep to them to eat. So the king says to all of his courtiers, what should I give her? So somebody says you should return her sheep back. Somebody else says you should give her 10 sheep. Somebody says 100 sheep. He replied, he says, wrong. Even if I give her half of my kingdom, she saved me and she saved you. In this way, Allah's deen was saved by Hussein ibn Ali. Anyone who takes a step in the way of Sayyid al-Shuhada, the ziyarah is accepted, the dua is accepted, and everything else is accepted. But at the same time, 1,000 hajj, 1,000 umrah. Today you've walked or you've driven to come here. And as per the rules and regulations of this country that we live in, we've kept under capacity to make sure that we're strict in these rules and regulations. So we have, as usual, our two elders who are here. But we also have somebody who's come 6 hours to be here from our neighboring country. And though his dua will be accepted today, we also ask him to pray for us. For anybody who comes in such a distance is accepted. Remember, when we go to Karbala, for the Zawar of Hussein, for the Azadar of Hussein, Ahle Iraq, look at their hospitality. When somebody comes to our country, we also, and they come for Hussein, similar hospitality we're meant to show. Our acceptance of our dua is showing hospitality for those people who are the guests of Hussein. And their acceptance is for every step that they take for the sake of Imam Hussein. And this is something if we can learn now, inshallah, when the doors open for Arba'in and when you will go there, truly then you'll understand what goes in the heart of Ahle Iraq when a 6-year-old boy comes to you and says to you, for the sake of Hussein, take this. You know what? I've mentioned this before, but I remember many years ago when we were walking from Najaf to Karbala. It was a time when Daesh were at its peak, and there was a threat that any of us could have been attacked. And from all over the world, people were coming, and at that stage, loads of people came. Why? Because know something, in the history of Shiism, whenever Imam Hussein's shrine is in stake, you find the most Shia come for the sake of Imam Hussein. So at that moment we're walking and there's children with me. Someone from Dubai is there, someone from East Africa is there, somebody from America is there, we've got people from Canada there, from people from the United Kingdom who are there, people from France who are there. And as we're walking, a small boy comes. And we remember when the small boy came, he didn't have any shoes on. And when he came, all he had was handkerchiefs, what we call tissue. In America they call handkerchiefs. Brought it forward. And he came and he said something. He said, look, my mother and father were killed by Daesh. Now imagine small boy. He says, I don't have anything to give you. I wish I had something, but I have no money. All I have are these tissues. If you take one, at least on the day of judgment, I can say to Fatima al-Zahra, I did something as well. Now that type of iman, that type of belief, if we find it in a 6-year-old boy, today we don't have that. Of course we do. We just have to uncover that. Whether or not we took it or not is another matter, because in Sharia, as you know, child as yatim, it could have been his mal, it could be otherwise, there's Sharia issues when it comes to taking something from a child, etc. But anyhow, it's the principle of what it is. the principle of the fact that here's a child whose consciousness is elevated. This is what Imam Hussein teaches us. Teaches us that level of humanity that unfortunately we've lost. And we have to develop that as well. We have to enshrine that as well as these nights are going. There was a maqsad, there was a method of Imam Hussein. Look, let's go back and see. Every Imam system has been quite unique. The only two Imams that we have who raised a sword were Amir al-Mu'mineen and Imam Hassan. The reason why they raised it was because they were caliphs of an empire that required to be protected. Otherwise, Amir al-Mu'mineen, his haqq was taken for 25 years, he remained quiet. He didn't take a sword. He didn't fight. But those three battles he fights is because of the peace of the community that they were attacking, he was defending. Look, we're not saying we're pacifists, that somebody comes and kills you when you stand there allowing somebody to kill you. According to every charter, you have the right to proportionally defend yourself. But none of the other Imams, you notice, lifted up a sword. Why? Because they weren't in the position to keep the peace of a country. The only person who defends himself is Sayyid al-Shuhada. If somebody was to ask you the question, was Hussein going to fight? Actually, he wasn't. His purpose was never to fight. Whenever somebody wants to make an excuse, they say, well, you know, you should sign a peace contract like Imam Hassan did. Or if they want to justify their own means, we should fight like Hussein. Actually, Sayyid al-Shuhada didn't fight. He wasn't out there to fight. His movement against oppression wasn't in a movement to fight. In fact, what Sayyid al-Shuhada was teaching us was the first stage of Tawheed, which is Tabarra. He did Tabarra on Yazid. He says, look, we're not here to fight, but I'm not going to give allegiance to Yazid. He taught with his character. It wasn't the fact that he came forward with a sword. Had that been the case, Medina was the ample place to take control. As you know, our ulama have said, when three people are together, nobody can defeat them. Who are they? Muslim bin Aqil, Abu al-Fadl Abbas, Muhammad Hanafiya. If those three brothers with Sayyid al-Shuhada came out close to Baqi, then you would have seen that no one could have come and won. What does Imam Hussein do? In the principle of the fact that he didn't want to fight, he says to one, you stay in Medina, you go to Kufa, come with me. Purpose of that, Hussein is saying he didn't want to fight. And what is the biggest dalil that he didn't want to fight? He took his children with him. And by taking his children, he showed the world their oppressors. If someone can turn around today and say that we accidentally killed a child, then tell me, you accidentally killed Qasim? You accidentally killed Al Yasser? You accidentally killed Aun and Muhammad? And then you accidentally cut their heads? And you accidentally raised them on a spear? And if that's all accidental, then let me ask you a question then. What about those small girls? You accidentally beat them? You accidentally scarred them? They accidentally died? Tell me, for those people who say that it was a war between two princes, tell me, where's the truth in that? How can you accidentally exterminate the entire progeny of Fatima and then say that Yazid is correct? Your Islam and our Islam is completely different. You cannot do that. Look at the methodology. Every single Imam's way was the way of the heart. Why does Imam Hussein go to Karbala for? What is the actual purpose of him going? His purpose is to change hearts. He knew that he had to change hearts. You cannot change somebody by force. You cannot change somebody by the sword. Even when it comes to marriage and otherwise, when you convert for somebody, when you do something for somebody, they'll be the very same person to take you out of the deen as well. Many a time we've seen this. This is why do not force somebody to convert. Do not force somebody to do something. Do not force somebody to wear particular clothing. Do not force anybody to do something. The reason being is this. If their heart doesn't appreciate it, what happens is that and eventually they will go out of the deen as well. Their traditions, if you force somebody or somebody does hijab for somebody else, that other person will be the person who will push this person away from hijab or away from Islam. What is Imam Hussein doing? Had he forced and had he won? Who've done this before? Zubayris did that. Where are they today? Umayyis did that. Where are they today? Abbasis raised in the name of Imam Hussein were the Abbasis today. They were even more tyrannical. People came forward in the name of Imam Hussein. They used the name of Imam Hussein. They fought in the name of Imam Hussein, and people fought with them. Question is this though, where are they today? What is the method of Imam Hussein? The method of Imam Hussein is the method of Imam Zain al-Abidin, and the method of Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, and the method of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, and the method of Imam Musa al-Kadhim, alayhi salam. Method of each one of them. What is that method? You begin by purifying people's hearts. You begin by capturing people's hearts. You create a revolution to revolve. Revolve what? Revolve people's heart. Inqalab. What? Qalaba what? Where does it go back to? Qalb. You change the heart of the people, everything else takes form of itself. What is the method of the 12th Imam? Was sahib dawah nabawiyah. He comes forward and he gives dawah to people, introduces people, brings people in the way that the Prophet did. What is the Prophet's methodology? Through rahmah, through mercy. What are the methods of the prophets? What did Nabi Isa do? Washed the feet of people, washed the hands of people, looked after those people who are oppressed. What did the Prophet do? The first thing in Mecca he does is he takes care of those people who are oppressed. Today we have it the other way around. We try and attract those people who are rich to come. If you want to make a difference, you want to grab people who are rich. You want to grab somebody who you think is a mover and shaker. That's never been the methodology of prophets. They do it the other way around. They take the most impoverished and nurture them and they bring them to the top. Look in Karbala and see. Half of those people who are there, they weren't well-to-do people. They were those people who Sayyidul Shuhada brought forward and said, they may not think you're something, but I think you're something. My Allah thinks you're something. And until the day of judgment, when people come and do my ziyarah, they're going to be doing your ziyarah as well. Understand this philosophy. Go to those people who are here and bring them up here. Why? Because those people who are oppressed, their hearts are already broken. And Allah comes to people whose hearts are broken. Musa says, Nabi Musa says, Allah, my heart is broken. Allah replies, I'm for the brokenhearted. What is Sayyid al-Shuhada? Nur. Nur of Allah. So when a heart is broken, the nur of wilayah goes into that heart faster. Why have we been told? Why do our elders, our ulama, have now said, when you're living abroad, and in fact, even if you're living in an Islamic country, help people. Help those people who are impoverished. Nurture those orphans. Give food to those people in the town that you live in. Look, we're going through a period of austerity. Half of our countries in the West are going through a recession now. There are many people on the streets, you've seen it. What is our responsibility? In the name of Hussein, who revived Allah's deen, remember, Allah's giving you a formula. The one who can revive the deen of Allah can revive the deen of Allah now as well. In the name of Imam Hussein, make a step. Take a step. Go forward. Feed people. If you live in London, feed people. If you live in Birmingham, Manchester, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Maryland, Virginia, Washington, Chicago, Toronto. And for all of those other people who have messaged from all over the world, Orlando, LA, Sydney, Dubai, Mumbai, Karachi, and if I've missed any other name who have mentioned or have texted me in the last couple of days, I apologize. But wherever you are in the world, take this message of Imam Hussein. What did Imam Hussein do? Raise those people who are impoverished. Go out in the name of Imam Hussein. Even if you can give one single date with the right intention, you see how Hussein takes over. We've been told you just give him one of our sayings. We do the rest. You don't need to give him the whole Quran. Nobody reads it. So when somebody knocks on your door and gives you an entire Bible with literature, you're not going to read it, it's too much. But if they were to give you a small slip, you'd read it. That's all you need to do. We're not evangelical, we're not here to convert anybody. All we want to do is show you the beauty of who Hussein ibn Ali is. That's what we want to do. And that's it. And the world appeals and they come to him. So look, the entire system of the Imams have just been that. None of the Imams, look, We're not living in worse times than the fourth Imam was. We're not living in worse times than the fifth Imam was. You're not being exterminated. Your children are not being killed. From the blood of Hassani Sayyids, Baghdad was created. The Qudama said it's makruh to live in Baghdad. Why? In the time of the Abbasis, the walls, they were plastered, Hassani Sayyids were. An extermination process took place. Awlad al-Zahra were killed wherever you found them. Why do you think Imam al-Ridha in 4 years says to the Saada, leave, go as far as you can. Why do you think they're from the tips of Spain all the way down to Indonesia? Because they ran away from oppression. They went wherever in the world they could do because they were being killed. This is why they're everywhere. The most Sayyids today, Indonesia. As far as Indonesia, there's a mosque in Burma, Muhammad Hanafiya Mosque. Those inhabitants, some of them over there say Muhammad Hanafiya is buried. Of course, that's not the case, according to our history. However, it's fine. When you make something Sha'ir al-Husayn, your Sha'ir Allah, it's respect there. Today, Sayyidah Zainab has two graves. One in Damascus, one in Cairo. Some of our ulama say one is stronger, the other say the other is stronger, riwayat. And both of them are very strong. Ayatollah Behjet says Cairo is the asl. Ayatollah Tabrizi would say Damascus is the asl. Say the Zainab over there. Regardless of what it is, your hajjah fulfills there, your hajjah fulfills there. Niyyah. It's the heart. Ahlul Bayt and the nur of the Ahlul Bayt are not restricted to one place. Try say Ya Abbas now and you see. It's not restricted to one place. When you go and your parents teach you to go under that alam, whether you're in Karbala or you're in Winnipeg, the power of that alam is the power of the alam. So look at our imams. In the most period of time where there was the most oppression, they had a four-pronged methodology. I can't speak any more open than this. What I'm saying, analyze it, write it down, go home, think on it. Your entire philosophy of survival of the last 1400 years is what I'm about to say. And as many things, it will take much longer if we were to expand and talk about it. But within the time frame we have, I'm going to mention it to you and I'm going to move on. For those who grab it, grab it. For those who don't, you don't. What did Imam Zain al-Abidin do? You know the first thing he did? He developed networks. Networks, private networks, all over the Islamic world, where he could teach people three things. Ilm, ma'rifah. Now what's ilm? Ilm is what you have it. I don't need to explain it. Ilm of the deen and ilm of the dunya. Ma'rifah. Ma'rifah has to do with the spiritual travel. Taught your spiritual travel. Taught your spiritual practice. But at the same time, pragmatically, he made sure that the community was firm. And at the same time as well, he made sure of another thing. And that was that this community wasn't going to be targeted after Karbala. Fifth Imam, the same thing. Sixth Imam, the same thing. On the point of the ninth Imam, Ghaybati Sughra essentially begins, where the Imam, automatically three of our Imams, essentially go into occultation. And they devolve into their networks. Why do you think that a government or a group like the Fatimids was successful? Because even before secret societies were founded, they had their own secret societies. The entire Templar model was based upon the Fatimis when they most probably bumped into them in either Quds or in North Africa. But look, I don't want to go deeper than that. The only thing here is, I will say, how did you identify a Shia? Because they used to wear a ring on a particular finger, which was a turquoise. Had a particular handshake, had a particular stuff. Survival. Why do you think in the time of Harun Rashid that there's a tradition that says that the women of the Ahlul Bayt, they only had one cloth amongst a number of people. Fundamentally, the reason was this, because he was worried, how is it possible the Imam has so much wealth? Harun Rashid was giving, but whenever somebody went to the Imam gave more. So he said, perhaps through the women that these network of khums and zakat is there, strip them, search them. In the time of the sixth Imam, they say, in fact, in the time of the eighth Imam, very close to that happening, which didn't even happen in Karbala, hukum was given, search these women. And at that stage, the Imam then says, if you do that, then we'll fight. Got that close to it. But the Imam protected, and it's his responsibility to protect his women. But look, ma'rifah is important. Firstly, education. Educate yourself. Every Shia, whether you're living in the West or you're living in the East, it is your responsibility to educate yourself. Educate, education for all of us, male, female. Our ulama have said, as high as you can go, as high as you can go, go to university, take your master's, grab a PhD. However high you can go, do it. If you have the responsibility or if you have the opportunity, if your parents are taking care of you, go and study. Learn a skill. If university is not for you, learn a skill. Allama Tabatabai would say. People asked him, what do you do? He used to read. So they said, don't you get bored? He says, when I do, I read something else. Ilm is not something you can get bored with. This is what Amir al-Mu'mineen says. Two types of people's thirst will never quench. One who goes after money, the more they accumulate, the more thirsty they become. And second, the people who go after ilm, the more they gain, the more thirsty they become. Very famously though, Allama Tabatabai on the day of Ashura, first year when he was in Najaf, studied on the day of Ashura, went blind. Goes to Sayyid al-Shuhada, says, from today onwards, I won't study on Ashura day. His eyesight came back. Remember, when the day of Ashura comes, do not work. Do not study. Do not do anything, because that day is specifically and only for Sayyid al-Shuhada. Even if your business is collapsing, your education is collapsing, the world is collapsing, just remember one thing. Hussein ibn Ali. Nobody else. So this is important. Take it to the second stage. What else was the responsibility of the Imam? The second responsibility of the Imam was this. To teach people ma'rifah. In this day and age, how do we do this? This is how we do it. Look, first thing is this. Hadith Qisa. Why is Hadith Qisa important? Hadith Qisa, in and of itself, was brought down and given nisbah to Zahara. Anything that's given nisbah to Zahara, it's the fastest methodology of acceptance. As I've said before, when Ayatollah Tabrizi's 40th came, and ulama were discussing whether the sanad is weak or not, Ayatollah Behjad walked in and said, read Hadith Qisa. Ayatollah Bahuddiniya said, from the four things nadhar that you should do when you're falling into a problem, one of them is to recite Hadith Qisa. Second is what? Second is tawassul. Take the tawassul of Ahlul Bayt. What type of tawassul? I'm going to go through a story. That story is this. Some of you privately may have heard it from me, but because others haven't heard it, outside, I'm going to mention this. Story is this. Muqaddas Ardabili. Who is Muqaddas Ardabili? That person who Imam al-Zaman called Muqaddas. Why is he so? Because he took care of the small things. Going to Hajj, horse is there, letter is given. He gets off his horse and he begins to walk. Why? Because he remembers, I only paid for this much, and here somebody's giving me something extra, so I'm going to walk. That is a person who takes care of the small things, takes care of Sharia. What else do you find about Muqaddas Ardabili? And as you know, why is he Muqaddas? As he's going to Kufa, there's a horse rider who's coming. And as that horse rider comes forward, he says, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Kufa. He says, get on my horse. Gets on his horse. Sheikh Ahmed, do you know so-and-so from Ardabil? After Sheikh Ahmed told him, I'm from Ardabil. He says, yes, I know him. He's a great man. What about so-and-so? Great man. What about so-and-so? Great person. And eventually the horse rider comes and he says, do you know Sheikh Ahmed? The one who they call Muqaddas Ardabili. Here Sheikh Ahmed replies, he says that they exaggerate. He's actually not Muqaddas as you may think he is. So the person smiles. He says, Sheikh Ahmed, if Muqaddas Ardabili wasn't Muqaddas Ardabili, he wouldn't be on the horse of the 12th Imam. The people like that. Now, without going any deeper into this, how does Sheikh Ahmed Muqaddas Ardabili become Muqaddas Ardabili? He says one thing. Tawassalu Khaja Nasir al-Din al-Tusi. There is a tawassal that you recite on Tuesday, but there is one which is slightly more lengthier. Muqaddas Ardabili says, I got to this maqam. That maqam that Ayatollah Hassan Ilahi says, that there are two people who I don't have access to in Alam Arwah. After gaining the ability to go into and access Alam Arwah, Hassan Ilahi, the brother of Allama Tabatabai. Two people. He says one of them is Muqaddas Ardabili. Why? Because he's Jawar Amir al-Mu'mineen. He's close to Amir al-Mu'mineen. He's up there with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Mokils don't allow me. That Muqaddas Ardabili says that the maqam that I reached was because of this tawassul. Why? Because the tawassul increases ma'rifah. And as you know, if you recite this tawassul a number of times, it's for hajj as well. And I'm not going to go into it. But every family at least, in a time where ma'rifah is decreasing, in a time where wilayah is decreasing, people don't talk about wilayah anymore. These 10 days about the fadail and the masaib of Ahlul Bayt, how many people today are talking about the fadail and masaib of Ahlul Bayt? Why aren't we talking about these things? Why aren't we increasing our ma'rifah? We can have workshops for everything else. This is about connection. But one of the reasons is this. When wilayah becomes weaker, then tawassul is the only way to strengthen that wilayah. So what do? Tawassalu Khaja Nasir al-Din al-Tusi. And in this way, those things which are nisbah to Ahlul Bayt. So second thing is ma'rifah. What is the third thing? Now remember this. Third thing is a dhikrullah. Remember dhikrullah as much as you can. What is the best dhikr that has no awarif, that has no side effects? Every dhikr, remember, every name of Allah has a side effect as well. For example, you say ghani, ya ghani, ya ghani, you want to get rich. Remember, ghani is a person who's completely independent of everything else. If you don't know the proportion to recite it, you'll find people will start leaving you because you'll want to be independent. Tomorrow, if your children or wife leave you, then think what you're doing. But this is why for all afkar, it has to be within a controlled environment. Somebody has to give it to you with ijazah. Why? Because the spiritual master is also in charge of removing the hurdles that come in as well. This is why they say go to the Kamilin. This is why when Ayatollah Kashmiri was asked, this is why when others were asked, even though Ayatollah Kashmiri himself was Kamilin, part of the Kamilin, but he was asked, who's the best teacher of Irfan? He says, living at the moment, Ayatollah Behjet. When he was asked, who were the top students? Now remember, Sayyid Ali Qadi's students were who? Allama Tabatabai, Hassan Alahi, Ali Muhammad Burujardi, Abbas Kashani, Ayatollah Behjet, etc., etc., etc. So he was asked, even Ayatollah Khoi, for a short period of time, was a student of Sayyid Ali Qadi Marhum. So the question was asked, who are the best students of Ayatollah Qadi? Ayatollah Kashmir said three people. It says Ali Muhammad Burujardi, Ali Behjet. And the third one, who they called Qadi Athani, was who? Sayyid Ahmad Kashmiri. If you go to Srinagar today, he's buried there. Stories say that he had the ability, Maut Ikhtiari, whenever he wanted, his soul would go into Malakut. He was the second Qadi. And after Najaf, he went back to Srinagar where he resided, where he's buried. Another student of Qadi, Sayyid Hassan Masqati, is also buried in India. He's buried in Hyderabad. So in this way, you found these are the students, Kamilin. And within this line, Kamilin, their job was really to help people on this pathway. Now you can ask me a question. Well, today, there's nobody around. What do we do? After Ayatollah Behjat, all of those students from the line of Qadi have disappeared. Yes, maybe there was somebody in Najaf. Sheikh Abd, he's passed away now. And there's a second as well, which people most probably don't know about, nor am I going to mention his name until they don't declare it themselves. But the fact of the matter is this. People can say, well, people like that are not around anymore. You don't need people like that to come in front of your face. You have to build yourself so that the 12th Imam sends people to you. You have to build yourself up. Some people will say, well, we're at a disadvantage in time of Najaf. They were X, Y, Z. Okay, they were. They say ulama of Najaf in the olden days had three abilities. One ability they had, ilm Jafr. One ability they had, Tay al-Ard. One ability they had, they could read Zamir, the Urafa. So, well, we don't have that anymore. Well, there's a reason why. As materialism increases, spirituality decreases. If you work on yourself, everything will open up. Remember one thing, you are not separated from your Imam. You are not separated from Sayyid al-Shuhada. Let me give you a tradition. One day, fifth Imam says, my father and I were walking. We were walking outside of Medina. I saw that an old man came forward. My father, with all of respect, went running. And he said, may my mother and father be sacrificed to you. Kissed him on the hand, respected him. Afterwards, when I asked my father who that was, he said that that was my father, Hussein ibn Ali. Sayyid al-Shuhada, you physically can't see him. That doesn't mean that he's divided from you. Remember, the Shuhada are not dead. Allah's given them risk. You can't see them. It's a very thin line. Where do they reside? Malakut. Develop your own malakut. Alam al-Malakut. Open your eyes and you'll see it. You'll see what you need to see. Have you not? This book that's been translated that everybody has in their house now, Elixir of Love, about Rajab Ali Khayat. Rajab Ali Khayat himself was a Khayati. He wasn't even an alim. But in that book, when he says salam, the imams came in front of him. Was it an alim? Just a normal person. But you can build yourself up to that level. What does it require though? It requires focus. Dhikrullah. If you were to ask me what the best dhikr is, the best dhikr without any awarith is salawat. Just remember that the world is watching. Let it not be that they say that our two elders in Edinburgh can't give a salawat. Oh, mashallah. Not only the elders, but the youngsters in Edinburgh can also. And this is that Edinburgh, that Imam Hussein Day, nowhere in the world has been established but Scotland officially. That nowhere else in the world has that iftikhar, but Scotland does. That Imam Hussein Day officially has been established in Scotland. So no. And this is the power of salawat. And we've got to continue to do it. Remember, you know what you're doing. With salawat, you're removing hurdles. You're removing hurdles. What are you doing? You're saying to Rasulullah, you're giving him salawat and salam. You pray for Rasulullah, you think he's not going to come and pray for you? He's not going to come and pray for your family? Focus on what you're saying. This is why they say people, some people say Bismillah, and others say Bismillah and they walk over water. For example, why? Ma'rifah of what you're saying. Bismillah in and of itself contains Isma Adam. Second dhikr, remember this always, Sajda Yunasiya. Sajda Yunasiya is very powerful. Recite Sajda Yunasiya. Why? What is it? La ilaha illa anta subhanaka inni kuntu minadh-dhalimin. Go into Sajda If you ever get an opportunity, 5 times, 10 times, 20 times, 50 times, recite it a couple of times. Why is that important? They say that if you want your hijab to open from your eyes, dhikr yunasiya for 40 days. You recite it a particular amount of times, you'll see your hijab opens. Hujab begins to open. Haqiqah begins to reflect inside of you. Akhlaq begins to become kamil. Final thing is this though. There's one more thing the Imam taught us. You know what that is? Service to other people. Today, Shias must be recognized for their service, for their kindness, for their kindness, for their giving. And we have to give unconditionally without wanting anything back. And that's what will make the difference, that when we give unconditionally without wanting anything back. So look, we can develop this discussion forward. There's something I wanted to mention to you, but looking at the time, we don't have the time to discuss it. Remember these jewels. Everything is there for you. Ilm, study hard. Ma'rifah, tawassul of the Ahlul Bayt. Especially introduce into your house. Once a month, I'm saying. Okay, not even once a week, once a month. 12 months of the year for every imam do tawassul of Khwaja Nasiruddin al-Tusi. You'll see balas removed from your life. Afata removed from your life. Peace comes into your heart. And then dhikr, recite salawats, recite istighfar. Don't you remember when one of our brothers was unable to get married? What did Aghab Ahjad say to him? Very simple. Recite salawat and do istighfar. When you've recited enough and you feel like changing, do istighfar. Within a week, a proposal came for him. Happily married now. Istighfar and salawat. Both of these are amazing. Why? Istighfar, you are repenting and then you're going back to Allah. What does that do? Removes hurdles, trials, tribulations. Because remember one thing. What is the purpose of your life? You are traveling back to Allah. By traveling, you have to go from different maqamat stations. Manazil. You have to go from one level to another level to another. And inshallah, maybe tomorrow we'll look at it. There are 100, according to at least Manazil al-Sa'irin, that some of the Urafa study, which is probably the most comprehensive book on the different stages. He says that there are 100. Though he said, I was taught 1,000, but he's compiled it to 100. And he says each one of these has a beginner, intermediary, and advanced level. That how you go through these different stages, Manazil. We'll look at it tomorrow. I want to go into much deeper into the philosophy of these manazils. That when is the stage of fatwa? When is the stage when mukashifat comes? When is the stage when you go through perfection? Inshallah, we'll go through that tomorrow. Look, tonight I want to say a couple of words on a small yatim boy. You know, they say when Imam Hassan was poisoned, as the poison was cutting his liver, he wanted to vomit. They say he vomited out blood. When he vomited out blood, he wasn't worried for himself. You know what he says? He says, Brother Hussein, hide this. He says, why, brother? He says, because Zainab is coming. She won't be able to see this. Hide it. Imam Hussein hid it with tears in his eyes. So when he began to cry, Imam Hassan looks up at him and says, Brother, why are you crying for? He says, Brother, I can't see you in this state. What does Imam Hassan say? He says, Brother, don't cry. La yawmika ya Aba Abdullah. A day will come. Hussein's day will be worse. In the tradition it says a 6-month-old baby was crawling on the floor. As he was crawling, when he saw his father, he smiled and he jumped on his father's chest. His father was holding it tight. Farwa comes forward, says, son, your father's sick. Your father's ill, he's dying. What does Imam Hassan say? He says, leave my son, because after today my son's going to become yatim. Have you ever seen a yatim? Shall I describe to you Imam Hassan's yatim? Eid was a couple of weeks ago. They say in Medina, when all of the fathers would take their sons to Eid prayer, one small son would walk with tears in his eyes to Baqi. As he would sit there next to his father's grave, he would say, Father, if only you were here, you would have taken me by the hand as well and taken me to Eid prayers. May Allah never show any son that. Small son. So what? And only fathers can understand this. Fathers, you know, even when your son falls to the ground when he's so young, your heart breaks while your child is ma'soom. God forbid somebody hits your small ma'soom child. Have you ever seen a child look up at you and with innocence to say, why have I been hit? Now imagine if you're helpless and your hands are tied behind your back, or you're not in this world to be able to protect that child. Have you ever seen a mother raise a child when the father isn't there? That mother knows that her son's yatim. She feels his pain. When that child cries, she feels it more. When that child falls, she feels it more. You know what the tradition says? The tradition says on the day of Ashura, when Qasim was asking for permission to go into the battlefield, Imam Hussein just said one thing. He said, son, Qasim, when I look at you, I think about my brother. I remember my brother. Qasim, maybe your mother is so alone, she may not want you to go into the battlefield like this. Qasim goes. They say Farwa was sitting in a tent. In that tent, Sayyidah Zainab was there. She could hear a child crying. Why? She's a mother of a yatim. She turns around and she says, I think my son is in pain. Let me go to my son and see. When she enters the tent, how a child is. That child had his forehead on his knees. He was holding his knees together and he was crying. So she asks him, she says, son, why are you crying like this for? One reply comes, because uncle isn't allowing me to go into the battlefield. Look, I wish I could recite this. It's difficult for me to recite it. Shall I tell you something? There was a wa'iz who used to go on the minbar in Karbala, and he used to recite the masaib of Fatima alayhi salam. One night, Fatima alayhi salam comes in his dream, and she says, my wa'iz, why don't you recite my masaib? And he begins to say, in fact, why don't you recite my son's masaib? And he begins to say that your son was poisoned and arrows were fired in your son's body. So much so that when the body came back, a sister was sitting there with her hands. She plucked out every single arrow. Hassan's masaib is twofold. One musibah of Hassan is this, that as a small boy, he saw his mother coming back. Where was she coming back from? You know where she was coming back from. When Fidda was asked Imam Hassan, she would say, Hassan, son, why do you cry more than Hussein for? He replied, he said, Fidda, I was standing outside, Hussein was inside. Look, I don't need to say any more than that. His other masaib was his son. What happens? Tradition says this. When Qasim is sitting there with his mother, he's crying. His mother can't take it. Eventually she remembers. She remembers that when his father was leaving the world, He said, if Qasim ever comes into problems, let me write this ta'weez and tie it on his hand, on his arm. When that moment comes, when Qasim is in great pain, ask him to open it up. She says, there's no greater pain than this. Qasim opens it up, tears were coming out of his eyes. Eventually, the tradition says, a smile comes on his face, removes the tears from his eyes. You know what it said? Ya walad ya Qasim. Oh, my son Qasim. Imagine a father after 13 years speaking to his son. Imagine how happy he would have been and how sad he would have been. Idha wajadta ammak al-Husayn ghariban wahidan adshanan mazluma. When you see your uncle Hussein in that state, go and give your life to him. Gets up, goes to his uncle, says, uncle, look at this letter from my father. Sayyid al-Shuhada looks at it, begins to cry, faces Medina. Brother, you didn't forget me even when I was so gharib. Hadith says both uncle and nephew hug each other so much so that both of them fall onto the ground. As they fall onto the ground, they say, Ibn Taus, Sayyid Ibn Taus. He says that one of the reasons maybe that Sayyid al-Shuhada fell on the ground crying like this was this. He may have been thinking to himself that all of the other Shuhada's body will be salim, but you'll find in Qasim's lifetime that this boy's body will be broken. He gets up. They say that he puts a white shirt on Qasim in such a way that people from a distance thought that it was a kafan. He was so small that he couldn't even get on a saddle. So what does he do? Remove the saddle and they put him on the horse. Now, generally, you have a coat of arms. You have a coat of mail. The purpose of that to protect you from being hit from arrows and from swords. What did Qasim have? Nothing. And as Qasim went into the battlefield, they say, a moon was shining as he goes in. Qasim kills one person and he kills another, but he was only 13. He was the only shaheed there going into the battlefield who wasn't even baligh. And as he was going in to fight, in the tradition it says, when one man came forward to fight him, Sayyid al-Shuhada looks up, he says, Allah, my Qasim is so small and this man is so big. Qasim goes, he remembers his grandfather, he kills him. And when he kills him, in the tradition it says, Umar ibn Sa'ad says, you're not going to defeat this child like this. He's from Banu Hashim. He's the grandson of Haydar al-Qarrar. Go kill him. Everybody attack him. From all angles people came. After all, the boy was only 13. One person came, hit him on the shoulder. The other one came, hit him on the head. Sayyid al-Shuhada couldn't take it. Like a lion, he comes marching in. And as he comes in, Qasim falls onto the ground. Horses begin to ride. They go across his ribs. All you could hear was bones crunching on the ground. And as Sayyid al-Shuhada comes as a lion, they say whatever little life Qasim had, he was so small, he was calling his mother for help. Tradition says, takes his abba, chucks it on the ground. When he lifts up the shoulder, the ribs collapse. When he lifts up the arm, they say the legs collapse. Somehow he brings all of the pieces together. And as he brings the pieces together, tradition says this. Farwa was standing there. She says, Zainab, my son went into the battlefield. What's Hussein carrying on his back? Matam Hussein.
Likha baba tumhe khwab mein dekha bechain hai dil mera ye kya khwab mein dekha baba mujhe ek khwab परेशान नजर आया बाबा मुझे एक हश्र का सामान नजर आया बेचैन है दिल मेरा ये क्या ख्वाब در خیمے پکھڑی ہے، میدانوں میں فوجوں کی طرف دیکھ رہی ہے، بے چین ہے دل میرا، یہ کیا خواب میں دیکھا، صغریٰ نے لکھا بابا تمہیں خواب میں دیکھا، دیکھا ہے کسی دشت میں تنہا ہی کھڑے ہو، پانی بھی میسر نہیں، پیاسے ہی کھڑے ہو، بے چین ہے دل میرا، یہ کیا خواب میں دیکھا، صغریٰ نے لکھا بابا تمہیں خواب میں دیکھا، کیا تم کسی آفت میں گرفتار ہو بابا، پھر کس لیے تم ایسے دل افگار ہو بابا، بے چین ہے دل میرا، یہ کیا خواب میں دیکھا، صغریٰ نے لکھا بابا تمہیں خواب میں دیکھا، دیکھا ہے کہ ایک خیمے میں بے چین ہے مادر، اور پیاس سے بے تاب ہے بھیا علی اصغر، بے چین ہے دل میرا، یہ کیا خواب میں دیکھا، صغریٰ نے لکھا بابا تمہیں خواب میں دیکھا، سب جنگ کے آثار نمایاں ہے سراسر، خیموں میں بپا ہے ایک کوہرام تلاتل، بے چین ہے دل میرا، یہ کیا خواب میں دیکھا، صغریٰ نے لکھا بابا تمہیں خواب میں دیکھا،
ماں کربلا دیا ماں کربلا دیا ماں کربلا دیا ماں، پتراں دیا لاشاں دے ٹکڑے ریاں لب دیا وچ سہراواں، ماں کربلا دیا ماں کربلا دیا ماں، صبر دے مالک نوں سین لے لایا کھے ازن جے دیوے تے، میں صبر دی سانج چے اکبر دے سینے چو سانگ ہٹاواں، ماں کربلا دیا ماں کربلا دیا ماں، آنکھ ماں کاس قسم دی مات احسان کری دیر تائیں لڑ داروی تیرے ٹکڑ مطابق ودنیاں نے میرے ویر حسین دی ساوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا جدوں قیدی ہو کے لنگیاں مقتل چون زینب کیتا لاشا ول ماوا نا ویکھن کتے رک نہ جاوڑ ساوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا رو کے ہر مائے ہو کہندی رہی شامیاں نو بھاویں درے مارو بس دے او اجازت وچ سہرا میں پتر دی قبر بناوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا سین زینب نے کیا کھولیا بے دکھیاں جیتے ساواں رکیاں مینو شام غریبا دے ویلے دے گا کون سلاوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا وین کلسوم داسی لال من کے غازی تینو میں پا لیا سی میرے سر دی چادر وی لتھ گئی جدو لتھیاں تیریاں باوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا سانگ تے اصغر نو ویکھ کے آنکھے رباب جے نہ قیدی ہوا سر سانگ تے تیرا لاون لئی میں دیر کدی نہ لاوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا شمر دے خنجر دے وار زہرا روکے نال سین کوے میں چکیاں پیس کے چاوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا ماوا کربلا دیا ماوا چودہ صدیاں ہویاں فاطمہ دی نوحا ਅੱਲਾ ਜਲ ਪੜਦੀਆਂ ਸਕਲੈਨ ਅਜੇ ਵੀ ਤੱਕਦੀਆਂ ਨੇ ਓ ਮਹਿਦੀ ਪੁੱਤਰ ਦੀ ਰਾਵਾਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਕਰਬਲਾ ਦੀਆਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਕਰਬਲਾ ਦੀਆਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਪੁੱਤਰਾਂ ਦੀਆਂ ਲਾਸ਼ਾਂ ਦੇ ਟੁਕੜੇ ਰਹੀਆਂ ਲੱਭਦੀਆਂ ਵਿੱਚ ਸਹਿਰਾਵਾਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਕਰਬਲਾ ਦੀਆਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਕਰਬਲਾ ਦੀਆਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ ਕਰਬਲਾ ਦੀਆਂ ਮਾਵਾਂ
ਅੱਲਾਹੁਮਾ ਸੱਲਿ ਅਲਾ ਮੁਹੰਮਦ ਵਾ ਆਲੀ ਮੁਹੰਮਦ ਵਾ ਅਜਲ ਫਰਜਹੁਮ